We'll start at the bottom of Nun Amudbet by the two dots. Right, so this is the next section of the Mishnah. Right, so the Mishnah says that it's certain items that because of Tikkun Olam that they were not gova mi, right, mishubadim. So there the Mishnah says emotin lechulat peirot ulsheva karkaot ulmazoni shava vanot mechlasim mishubadim v'bnei Tikkun Olam. That's the first part of the Gemara. Today is going to deal with this section of the Mishnah. Why not? What's the issue here? So what's emotin lechulat peirot? How come you don't take off for achilat peirot? It's my time. So what's the reasoning behind this? What's the Tikkun Olam? So amar ulam reishal mishubisha ain't ktuvim. Because they're not explicitly written. Since they're not explicitly written, therefore they don't qualify to be nigveh mi mechasim mishubadim. So Rashi explains, what does it mean that they're not explicitly written? So he says, because it's not written, hilchot dami karkarka kahave milve b'shtar l'achziach rayuto olav. When you're talking about the land itself, then that's written in the shtar, and that has achrayut on it. On the other hand, aval demei peirot have a milve al peh. It is equivalent to an oral loan. If it's an oral loan, then you're not lo tarpi mishabde, right? Then you're not mitaris from the mishabde. Now, the problem Rashi has is the Gemara Bava Metzia says explicitly, when you write akrayut in a contract, one of the things that's mentioned in the akrayut is peirot. And Rashi quotes that from the Gemara Bava Metzia. He says that even though you say anai kum vishpeh vina alim inun v'malehon v'shivcheon u'peredidhon, right, even though those are written explicitly in the akrayut and the obligations to the person who sells them the property, he says, but that doesn't work. Why? Because what's the reason when you write a milve b'shtar, when you lend with a shtar, when you have, is that you're allowed to be mishab, take from mishab, they have to take from encumbered property? That's because of islay kala, because they have a kol. Right, so something that's sold in a shtar has a kol. But that is not true by this, by peirot and all these items, they do not have a kol. Even if they're written down, right, then it does not have a kol, because first of all, Rashi points out that they don't even exist at the time of the sale, so we don't know what the peirot are, right? The peirot only happen later on. So if it's only going to happen later on, how can you have a kol that's yotze, right? The whole idea of a kol is that they're eating there at the time, people will know about it. So Rashi says, that's true of a mechira, that's true of a sale. That's not true of specific items that are inside the sale. So despite the fact that it's written, or the akrayut are explicitly written, nevertheless, it doesn't have a din of kol, and because of that, right, it doesn't qualify for taking mi mishabde. That's the one thing. Close, close. I'll just point out, Tosfos, this Gemara, this whole today's daf, almost line by line, Tosfos argues on Rashi in the pshat of each piece of the Gemara. So here again, Tosfos says that he doesn't agree with Rashi necessarily. He says that over here, he says, because at the shat ktiva lo v'edayin shum shevach in kolot ktiva, he says who? So then Tosfos says over here, what do you do with the case in our Mishnah of the Muslim Isha and the Banot that were there at the time of the Ktiva? Meaning that when you're talking about a woman who's getting Mizonos out of the property, you're talking about daughters who have been promised to get Mizonos, they're there at the time of the Ktiva. So Rashi says the whole problem is if they're not written at the time of the Ktiva, here they are there. So Tosfos gives two possibilities. One is either it's talking about Banot that were not there, they were only born after the time of the Ktiva. Or number two, he says that we're a skinan, right? That they were a case that they were existent. I mean, the daughters were there because they were girsha v'hadra, that they divorced them and then they came back. He took back his wife. So therefore, in those two cases, the wife is there or the daughters are there, and that's why they can take. They can be tarfei mi
mishab. The same ksuda as the first time.
Right. So that they're in existence in the second ksuba. So in those two instances, right? Even though they're command ketive dami. Right, they're
not actually written, but right. It's a known obligation.
Right, so Tosfos says, how do you say that according to Rashi's interpretation? What does it mean? Rashi says that they have to be existent at the time of writing. So he says over here, either you have to be talking about that the Isha, or he's had a daughter when he remarried, meaning that he divorced her and remarried. So that's the case here. Alright, so now, Gemara asks on this. So Amalei Rabbi Abba, the Ula, challenges Ula's position here that what? That it's ain't ktuvim. Bahab Muslim Isha Baba notes, right? Those are two of the things mentioned in our Mishnah, Kimman de Khtive Damu, right? There's if they're written, meaning even if you don't write them, they have the qualifications or they are as equivalent to being written. But Tani ain't Mutsin. And despite that fact, our Mishnah says you can't take them in Karkamishabde. So I'm like, Hotam Yikara Pakit Yitzkun, right? That is the original Kakana was established. The original lakana was established, even though they have a status as if ridden, nevertheless, they're only considered as if ridden when it comes to taking from unencumbered property. When it comes to taking from encumbered property, they are not considered ridden, they are not considered qualified to take from encumbered property.
What does that do for me? What? Why is it written for lakana? Why is it needed the chal? You could be motzi.
No, I mean, that is an obligation. Even if it's not written, it's considered a written obligation.
So
I mean, if it wasn't written, then there's no, I mean, then it was never, say they never spoke about it, and it was never written in the shtar at all. So that's its 9 days, then that it belongs, and the shtar belongs in the ksuba, and therefore she's entitled to collect on it, even though it was never written for her. Otherwise, she wouldn't be entitled to anything. Like, it wasn't written, it was an obligation that was established, so she wouldn't be entitled. The fact that she's entitled is because it's nine days, and it's considered as if written. Right, they are not written, meaning that's the same position as Ula. So Rabbi Zera asks the same question they asked of Ula. It's as if they're written. And our mission says you can't take them out of a comfort property. Again, that was the original property. That was the original takana, be that it's a tnai bezdin, that's why it's considered renin, but it's not considered to be taken from encumbered property. And the way Rashi frames it, which is an important frame, he says that why, if we did say it was taken out of mishab, it was taken out of encumbered property, it would shut down commerce, meaning it would shut down the ability to transact in real estate. Why? If he could forever have this problem that could come out, meaning that you don't know what it is, and it's too big an obligation, too big a risk for anybody to buy property knowing that his wife or his children could come after him for mizonos. So in order to prevent that, the original takana was, yes, it's a tnai bezdin, but it's only a tnai bezdin when it comes to bnei chori. Now, Rabbi Hanina Amar offers an alternative shot as to why these items are not collected from encumbered property. The fish ain't tzuvim, because they are not limited, they do not have a defined amount. So the Gemara says, the Rabbi Chania Ketsuvim Ketuvim Boi, does he require both defined and written? Or is it just defined as his issue? What is the issue here? Is the issue both Ula's issue, which is that it's not written explicitly, and number two, that it's not defined? Or is it simply that it's not defined? So the Gemara says, Hashma, we can bring a proof. It's my, right? A person who died and left two daughters, Uben, and one son. And the first daughter went ahead and took one tenth of the possessions for her dowry. In other words, right, this is one of the Tnai Ketuba that we know. Rashi over here defines it. I'm just going to say over here, Rashi says something very strange. He says, this is what daughters get. Shat bagrut onisuin. The time that they become bogeret, or the time they get married. Now, what we know from the Gemara Ksubos is simply when they get married. This was part of the dowry. This was something that they were entitled to at the time they got married. Rashi over here adds this term, shat bagrut, at the time that they reach to be a bogeret. Meaning that either or, which of course the Gunnar Shas at the bottom says here is that Zir Yun Ma'od. He says this needs a lot of investigating, because where did Rashi come up with this idea that also a bagrut, right, is equivalent to Nisuin? We've seen this in other places in defense of Rashi, is that a woman, when she reaches the age of bagrut, she's assumed to be getting married, or assumed to already be prepared to get married, right? So maybe that's what Rashi is referring to over here, that the Isur Nechasim either applies to her when she gets married, or bagrut, we assume she's about to get married any minute now when she's ready to get married, and therefore that's what he's saying here in Isur Nechasim. But anyway, it's not something that's explicitly mentioned in the Gemara in Ksubos. But nevertheless, this one daughter, this first daughter, took her Isur Nechasim, which she's entitled to, this one-tenth. V'loi speak a shnei gavot. The second daughter didn't have a chance to collect her one-tenth. Ad shemit the ben, before the son dies. Now, once the son dies, what happens? The daughters now become the inheritors of the father's estate. So now they're both entitled to it. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shnia Vitra. The second one's out of luck. Why? Because now she's got more than one-tenth of the possessions. So there's no reason to give her a tenth anymore. She collected 50% of the possessions now. She's out of luck when it comes to the one-tenth of the possessions. So Amar Le, Rabbi Chanina, Gedolo Mizu Amru. What do you mean? That's not true. Even greater than this, they said, Motziim the Parnasa, Vein Motziim the Mizonot. What the? That a person can take out of encumbered property when it comes to parnasa, when it comes to this dowry, or this one-tenth that the daughter is entitled to, you can take that out of misnichasim misubadim. But emotim mizonot, like our Mishnah says, right, that you're not allowed to take from encumbered property when it comes to mizonot. And you're telling me that the second one gave up her rights? Her rights are so great that she can take, even collect out of encumbered property. You're going to tell me she gives it up once she inherits it? Right, so Gemara says here, what am I going to prove for this? Bahar parnoso demikets kaitza. Right, parnoso is something that's a fixed amount, kitsuvim. We know how much it is, it's one-tenth of his possessions. Mikt of loktiba, but yet it's not written explicitly. I mean, it doesn't have to be written explicitly. Beka motziya, and nevertheless she's allowed to take it out. So if you say that, what do you see? From this we can prove that Rabbi Hanina's issue is simply ktsuvim, that they are defined amounts, not that it's written. Gemara says, no, that doesn't have to be. Shiny parnoso came in diskla kola kemantachtibidon. Everybody knows about a pranos, it has a kol, and what do we want? We want tziva. The only reason we require written is so that it is like kol. The whole idea of having a milba star, right, is a star makes it have a kol, and if it has a kol, then you can be collect from mishabdik. So if you can simulate writing down, which is what the Gemara says here, parnos has the equivalent of writing down because it is like kol. It's something that is known to the public, it's well known, and since it's well known, it simulates the equivalent or command, it's the equivalent of having been written down. So clearly not being written down, we have no proof from here, because it's possible that Hanina would also require writing, and he has that equivalent by parnosa.
So the parnosa from Israel, isn't that also a known obligation?
But it's not ketuvim. That we don't. There's no question there. Five for Rabbi Hanina, right? The only question here is if it's ketuvim, does he need ksiva or does he not need ksiva? Over here, there's no question because there's no ketuvim by Mizonot. All right, so now, I would just also point out here, Rashi says, what does it mean, ketuvim, v'apa pishein ketuvim? This is an interesting. Rashi says, when we say Rabbi Hanina, we have two choices. Either it's defined and written, or it's defined and not written. So what does Rashi say? That if it's defined and not written, then he says it becomes a milve al peh. Right, that it becomes this way, the milva al peh, she tsuva, takim mishabde. So Rabbi Hanina is going to hold that an oral loan, if it's defined, will be collected from mishabde, which is an unbelievable statement, because that means that now you have an opinion, Rabbi Hanina, who's going to say that you collect from a milva al peh, which we don't really find in the Rishonim, we don't find such a position. Tosfos challenges Rashi over here, and says he does not think that's the case. He says that we're not, Rabbeinu Tam says, that lo ayri b'milve. He says we're not even dealing with a loan. Ella b'shar milei de kitzvah, other things that are defined amounts. So he says, the davka b'milve al peh lo gavi b'mishabde, when it comes to an oral loan, then you don't take it from encumbered property, shum demand yosef, b'tzino yosef. When people borrow money, they do it privately. Person tries to hide, he's borrowing money, he doesn't make a public issue out of it. So now if you have a star, then it is like kolo. But when it's milva al peh, when it's just an oral transaction, nobody knows about it because you do it privately. But when it comes to shar mili de mekhra, any other transaction, that people do publicly because there's no embarrassment about doing such a thing. So Rabbeinu Tam disagrees with Rashi and says no, that this case, the case of Rabbi Hanina here, has nothing to do with milva, nothing to do with the loan. I mean, that Rashi says it encompasses everything. When he says ketuvim, ve'enam ketuvim, Rashi says that means everything, meaning that even a milva al peh will be now collectible from encumbered property. Thus it says that's not the case. Thus as Rabbeinu Tam says no, that milva is a separate category. And even Rabbi Hanina will agree that milva al peh is not collectible from encumbered property. He's talking about mecher, anything that has to do with transactions that are not subject to betzino, that aren't done privately. Mecher, anything that is a transaction that would be otherwise publicly known. In those cases, he wants to know if they're defined but not written down, do they still consider the Yisrael Kola? So that would be the question. Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos, what's included under this question of Rabbi Hanina. Now the Gemara tries to bring another possibility. Meitu Rav Huna Bar Manoah. Meitu, right? Binotehem nizonot minichasim b'nei chorim. Right? If they pass away, their daughters, right, will collect from the unencumbered property. Vehi nizonet minichasim mishubadim. And she collects from encumbered property, b'nei she kibalat chol. Because she is a equivalent of a creditor. What's the case here? The case here is a woman who got married, right, to a gentleman. She already has his daughter, and that daughter he commits to support for 5 years. Right? I mean, that's the part of the ksuba, right, that a person who brings in a stepdaughter to a marriage, that the new husband agrees to support her for 5 years. So say she married twice. So now she married the first guy. He committed to marry her for 5 years. For some reason, he died or they divorced prior, and then she marries again within the 5-year period. And then this new husband also commits to give her for 5 years. So there the Gemara says in Ksubos, one of them actually feeds her mizonos, and the other one gives her the monetary obligation of the mizonos. Now, when it comes to each of these two husbands that she married, their real daughters, right, their blood daughters, will not collect from Mishabde, from encumbered property, because that's our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that mizonos don't get taken from encumbered property. Yet, this daughter, this stepdaughter, who has an obligation in the Ksubot to be fed for 5 years, will collect from encumbered property. Why? Because she's a Balat Chov, because she's a creditor. He's explicitly said that he owes her this mizonot. So Gemara says, well, if that's the case, what do you have? You have kitsuvim. Why is it kitsuvim? Because it's for 5 years. We know exactly how much it is. But yet, what? It may not be, what? It may not be kitsuvim, because it's a knai. Right, it's again, it's a knai ksuba, right? And if it's a knai ksuba, right, it may not be written necessarily, but it might be ketsuvim. Now the Gemara says over here, well, I'm not so sure that's the case. So now, the way Rashi frames this, alright, I'm saying the Rashi frames this as a kasha on Ula. It's a question on Ula. Why? Because we have a case here which is ksuvim and not ksuvim. Right? If you have a ksuvim and not, right, ksuvim, then according to Rabbi Hanina, we can explain why she collects from Mishabde. She collects from encumbered property. Why? Because it's ksuvim. So at least according to one position in Rabbi Hanina, we could say that there's a reason to collect it. According to Ula, it requires it to be written down in order to have it to be collectible from Mishubadim. Here we have a case where it's not written down. So what do we answer according to Rashi? This is Rashi's interpretation of it. So Rashi and the Gemara answers, HaKomayiskinan B'Shekonam Yodo, that she actually made a kinyan. She made a physical kinyan from him. And Rashi says, so what does a physical kinyan do for you? Rashi says, Stam kinyan l'ktiba omei, that when you have a kinyan, that's going to be written down. That a kinyan is naturally written down, or that's what the natural course of events are. When you have a kinyan, you write it down. So therefore, it's equivalent of being written down in this case. That's the way Rashi learns the Gemara. Alright, so now...
Hold on. This kasha is according to one side in the Gemara on Ula?
No, according to, totally on Ula, the Gamre, because Ula says you need it to be written. And over here, this verse doesn't mention being written at all. Now the question is, what does it have to do with Rabbi Hanina? According to Rashi, it doesn't involve Rabbi Hanina at all.
Okay.
Now Tosfos disagrees again over here. It also says, what does the Kanu Miyodo do for you? Rashi says, Kanu Miyodo is Ki Ilu Ksubim Dami. So it says over here, no. Kashel the Kach Nira. What does he say? He says that a kinyan is only Tzvei Miksiva. That a kinyan might even be better than Ksiva. Because what's the whole purpose of Ksiva? Ksiva, again, is Kol. And every kinyan Miyodo might have the equivalent or even be a better standard for generating Kol than Ksiva. Not that it's if it's written, but rather it's better than being written because it generates Kol. That's the way Tosfos learns it. But either way, it would be, number one, a kasha and ula. Number two would be a proof to one side of Rabbi Hanina, which is that it's the only required ksuvim and not ksuvim. Now again, the answer can answer for both of them. The answer can be for ula, that it's ksuvim dummy, either because Rashi thinks it's equivalent to being written, or according to Rabbi Hanina, again, because it's ksuvim and it's ksuvim, so it may not be a proof to either side. According to Tosfos, again, it's the better than being written, and again, it can answer for both of their positions. Now the Gemara is going to challenge this idea of Mishkanam Yodo. If there's a kinyan over here, Benot Nami, right? So the Gemara says, what about his daughters, his blood daughters? And his blood daughters, we said they can't collect from encumbered property, but if he made a kinyan with them, why not? If kinyan works like Ksiva, or kinyan works like better than Ksiva, according to Tosfos, then why not the kinyan from his actual daughters? Why doesn't that work? The Gemara says, Konozu, Konozu. That he had made a kinyan with the stepdaughter, and he didn't make a kinyan with his regular daughter. The Gemara says, my Pascha. Right? What do you mean? Where do you see that in the Brei Mishnah? Where do you see that such a division takes place? The Gemara says, no. The reason is, right? The daughter, stepdaughter who was around at the time of the Kenyan, she made the Kenyan. The Kenyan helps her. His daughters, his blood daughters, were only born later, right? Were born after the fact. They didn't have the ability to have the Kenyan. So the Gemara says, well, why is it? Miloha eskina davi tarvayo b'shat kinyan. Right? Who says that the case is not when they're both alive at the time of the kinyan? Why are you saying that one is there at the time of the kinyan, one's not there at the kinyan? And how's the case? How do you have a case that his blood daughter is there at the time of the kinyan? He just married the woman. He's marrying the woman right now. She brings in a stepdaughter. How is he, are his blood daughters there? He just married the girl. So that's what Mar says, the Garsha Vahadra, right, that he divorced her and remarried her. So again, when he divorced and remarried her, those daughters, he got both his stepdaughter and his blood daughter there at that time. In that case, they can both make him a union.
And can he have daughters from the previous marriage?
He could.
That are his daughters and not hers daughters, and not her daughters.
Yeah, but they wouldn't be subject to the suba. I mean, that this comes out of, right, the daughters eat out of the tznaik suba, no, this woman's suba.
But what about from his estate in general?
From the original suba, you're saying, from a previous suba.
Whatever their mother was.
Right. Because what happened to her ksuba, right? Depending on what her ksuba did, if she collected her ksuba, she wouldn't be around anymore, right? Once she takes her ksuba, they wouldn't be entitled anymore. The question, if she died and she didn't take her ksuba, right, that there would be possibilities, but it's not necessarily definitive that it would be that way. Right, in this case, it's definitive. All right, Ella, Bito did Tanai Bezdin Ka'aflu, his daughters, his blood daughters, how do they eat? They eat out of Tanai Bezdin, Lo Mahani Lo Kinyan. Kinyan doesn't work by them. Bati Ishto, the Lava Tanai Bezdin, his stepdaughter, who doesn't eat out of Tanai Bezdin, Ka'aflu, right, Mahani Lo Kinyan. Therefore, Kinyan helps her. What type of answer is that? The chim migra gara? I mean, why is it worse? Because you get a mitznai basement, why does that make you in a worse position than you were if you didn't have mitznai basement? I mean, if you make a kinyan, it should work either way. Ella, bito, right, kevan de mitznai basement ka'achla, imer tsrari atafsa. No, because when it comes to his daughter, we worry about the fact, since it's tonight Bezdin, she's somebody from tonight Bezdin, we're afraid that she took money before, when her father passed away, or when she became entitled to collect from this ksuba. Then the, she came entitled to collect from this ksuba, sorry, at that, so she grabbed money. She took money at that time. And because she took money at that time, we don't allow her then to go collect from a mishabde. We're choshesh that she already took her mizonos. We're choshesh that she already grabbed the money because she's there at the estate and she feels entitled because of the tanai bezdin, and therefore we worry about it. Right? Whereas the stepdaughter, who's not necessarily as brazen and does not have a tanai bezdin, she won't grab the money. She won't go ahead and be toe-face the money beforehand, and therefore she'll be entitled to her to collect from the mishabde. We allow her to collect from the encumbered property.
In this last expression, when we say that for his daughter, Lomani Lakinian, why? What's the reason? This is even where he divorced and remarries, that she exists.
Right.
And why the Kenyan doesn't help because
this problem. We worry that she's already collected, and since we already collected, we don't entitle her to collect from mishabde. But it's interesting, Tosus was out. Now it's going to be an interesting case. By the daughter.
Why worry that over a Kenyan? If they made a Kenyan.
No, because we worry. If she takes it already, then we don't.
The Kenyan is for him, they have to take on an obligation. We're worried that he already met that obligation.
Right, exactly. So that's what Tosus says now, that it's an interesting case. What are you going to have here? You have a case with, what you're going to have is actually, if a daughter, right, goes ahead and wants to collect from the Nechori, she won't have to take a Shavua. She'll have to take no Shavua. She can collect from the Nechori without a Shavua, but she will not be entitled, even with the kinyan, to collect from Mishabde. As opposed to this, when Isha, a woman, right, who wants to collect, right, then, when it comes to ksuba, right, it will be just the opposite. She will have to take a shavua to collect, meaning that she won't be entitled to collect from a shavua, but once she takes a shavua, then she'll even collect to be able to collect from Mishabde. So you'll have a tzad chumra by both of them, that one of them has a tzad chumra and needs a shavua, but has a tzad chumra that you can't get it from Mishabde. So you have this unusual case, depending on what it is. By the Isha herself.
Or the Isha herself.
Saying, oh, her stepdaughter will get from Mishabde, because that's exactly our case here, that she has a kinyan, and then she's entitled to Mishabde, and we don't worry about Tzareg Tafsa, right? We don't worry about my stepdaughter that she grabbed the money.
She doesn't have to take a shwa.
No. Oh, she doesn't have to take a shwa. She's a bachol.
Right, that's the first comment by an Isha, that she's got to take the...
Right.
It's very strange. We don't trust his daughters.
Right.
We don't trust him.
And
the reason is not that he gave her the kosher, right?
Yeah, no, that he gave her.
So he asked him.
Did he give anything?
No. Yeah. No, he's dead. Otherwise, there's no mistake.
Did he give you anything? No, he did not give us anything. But we're not going to take him shul. So the Ritva says, so why should we even give him the Chorin?
Right.
So he says, we trust him. It's a cooler.
Right, it's a cooler. That's what Tosa says. It comes out unusual here, that we trust them by Bnei Chorin. We don't trust them by Meshavdei. But we don't make him take a Shavua. Yet by Nisho, when it comes to Shavua, we make her take a Shavua. And then we only trust her after Shavua. So
you're talking about from Yasmin, right?
Right.
It doesn't matter. From from a Pstamis, you have to take a Shavua.
For a woman, yeah. I mean, otherwise there's no problem. If you know you tell me, or there's no Bachol, then of course you can take it. There's nobody. She's not going up against anybody. She's not competing with anybody from the state. But
there's
generally there is another claim on the state. I mean,
she does, right?
Huh?
Or who knows, next year she...
She is the closest Yorish. If there's no male Yorish, I mean, there's a lot of other Yorishim ahead of her, maybe.
Otherwise.
Right, so now, anyway, yeah, it comes out this unusual situation that we believe them with Bnei Chorin, not Bishabdei. It's a very unusual case. Again, you have to say, it's the same thing we say about the woman, is that we saw this earlier in the Sefer, she may be Mora Heter. Because she's working in the estate, because she's living in the estate, maybe they're Mora Heter. So these daughters also, they say, oh, you know, this is my father. He gave me my money. This was my pocket money. This was my allowance.
No, but here you can ask her point blank.
Right, but she'll say,
were you Mora Heter?
But you can say, she'll say, I didn't get it from Amazonas. He gave me a gift. That wasn't my Amazonas. Right? That's the problem, is that we don't... The issue is that they don't what they really
create.
She could also she could even not be lying. She could have taken it that way. She could have assumed his intention might have been to make sure that her Mizora's needs are taken care of, and she might have understood it to be just a generous gift.
All right, so let's continue in the Gemara. Tashma. Amar Rabbi Nathan, Emet Abish Mancha Kadam Mepko Shosheni, the Shidcho Shalvisham. So Netan says, when do we say this case where the payroll belong to the, you can't collect on the payroll, you can't collect on the extra stuff that's in the karka, right? What's the case in our Mishnah?
Just the way quotes from Tosfos over here is that because we're choshish that she might have gotten the money, so we protect purchasers, right? So that's why she can't get from the Shabbatim, we don't protect the estate itself.
Right.
Right? That's less in line for protection.
Right.
That's the...
So up until now, we asked a question on Ula, right? We answered it.
We answered it, and the Gemara just goes through how's this answer a valid answer? Which is kind of miyodo, how's that a good answer?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Gemara went through all these iterations to figure out how you have kind of miyodo from the stepdaughter and not with the daughter. And the Gemara says you have kind of miyodo for both of them, but we're closer by the daughters of Sarai Atapso. That's what we're worried about. So that's why there's a difference in the outcome between the daughters and the stepdaughter. Okay? Now the Gemara says, "Touch one other attempt at this." Amar Rabbi Nathan, "Imatar man shikada mechko shoshen and lishiv kosher rishon." This is a case in the Mishnah. Remember that someone stole property and then sold the property. And you have a gazlan who sells property to Reuven. Reuven goes ahead and he now has a chrayut. He takes a chrayut from the recourse against the gazlan, and then he sells his property to Shimon. But the question is, did Reuven improve the property or not improve the property before he sold it? So now, Zman Shekadam Mechol Shel Sheni L'Shiv Kol Shel Rishon. Again, if he sold it out to the second one before he improved the property, before things got better, right? That's the only case where we say he can't go back to the Gazlan and collect Mimishabdik. About Kadam Shiv Kol Shel Rishon L'Mechol Shel Sheni, if his improvement of the property was already there before he sold it to the second guy, then he's allowed to collect, he has recourse against the Mishubadim, against the encumbered property of the Gazlan. Why? So the Gemara says, the whole issue here of why you can't collect from encumbered property has to do with when he sold the property, meaning that when was the property sold out, whether it has a kol or not, whether it's included in this next sale, whether it has kol, based on this.
It's not necessarily the kol shoshen, property. That's just the Shulagim that we're saying he's not, that we say he's not entitled to collect from. You're not talking about the same property.
Right, it's from the Gazlan's property. The Gazlan has property, which he said he sold the property to this guy, Reuven, with Akrayut on it, right?
And Reuven made improvements.
Right, Reuven made improvements to it. And then somebody else, he sold other of his property that he really owned, the Gazlan owned property, he sold it to Shimon, he sold other property. So if Reuven's improvements were prior to the sale to Shimon from the Gazlan, right, then those improvements are entitled to go back and collect from Mishabdeh. If it was right after he already sold the guy to Shani, how does the guy know to worry about this improvement on the property? How does he know how much recourse there is? Right, so what do you see from here? You see from here that what? According to Rashi, what do you see from here? Alma Shalom Glokamehus. Rashi says this is a problem for La Mishum Ktuvim Uchtuvim. Right, you don't require ktuvim and ktuvim. You don't need ktuvim and cut and written down. So what does that mean? That means that, according to Rashi, the problem over here is a problem to one side of Rabbi Chanina. What's the one side of Rabbi Chanina? That it's ktuv and not written down. Because over here you have ktuvim. Once we know how much he's improved the property, we know exactly how much is at risk here. Problem was whether it wasn't written down. Why wasn't it written down? Because at the time of the sale, it didn't exist, right? It wasn't written at that time. So Rashi says that's the problem here. So he says, it's not written, and it's not katsuv. It's neither. It has neither of these two items in it. If it has neither of these two items, it's a problem for who? Ula, and a problem for Rabbi Chanina, according to Rashi. It's a question on both of them, according to Rashi. Tosa says, you're going to see in a second from the answer to the Gemara, Tosa says, what are you talking about? This has nothing to do with that, right? Because the Gemara in a second is going to say Tanayi. It's a Machlokas Tanayim. And in the Machlokas Tanayim, the Machlokas is going to be between Ksiva and Ktuvim. Whether it's a written issue or it's a Katsuv issue. And according to Rashi, it's neither. It's not Katsuv and it's not Katsuv. So then according to Rashi, who is Rabbi Nathan going like? According to Rabbi Nathan, it's neither Katsuv and Katsuv. And then Rabbi Nathan becomes a third opinion, which the Gemara never addresses. So Tosfos rejects Rashi's
because if we're not talking about improvements made before the sale, then he could just continue making improvements.
Right, we have no idea how much the improvements will be. It's never defined.
Irrespective of what he's done until now, if it's not dependent on him taking anybody's before that sale, it's open-ended. He can continue making improvements and continue claiming.
Right, so therefore he can't collect from the Mishubadim. So far it says, no problem, it's not here. It's a machlokas tonight. The Tanya, imotzim lach for the perikles sheva karkot ulmazoni shavam banotum nechassim mishubadim. That's our Mishnah. Mipnei tikkun olam, because of tikkun olam, again our Mishnah, fi she'ain ktuvim. That sounds like ula. Right, Amar Rabbi Yosef, fi ma tikkun olam b'yesh b'zu. What type of tikkun olam is this? Halo ain ktuvim. The issue is what they're not katsuv. So Tosfos says simply, that's the machlokas over here. Is it ula or is it Rabbi Chanina? That's machlokas. The machlokas in this braisa is the machlokas tanaim, whether ktuvim is the issue for encumbered property or is ktuvim the problem for encumbered property. And that's what Rabbi Natan. The problem of Rabbi Natan is not about whether it was ktuvim or not, but rather whether it was ktuvim or not. Right? And that was the only issue here. But it was ktuv. It was ktuv because we know how much he improved the property until that point in time. But the question was ktuvim. Rashi says what? That it's not ktuvim and not ktuvim. That means Rabbi Natan's a totally different opinion, right? And then when he explains the price and say hello in ktuvim, Rashi says, tikkun olam, in a din litrus. Even without tikkun olam, you can't take any of this property because they're not ktuvim. So Rashi says, almost has, again, in his price, he has to define it as being both, which does not seem to be the simple pshat in this price in the machlokas. So again, Tosfos says the problem is for ula, that it's not written in the case of Rabbi Natan, and the solution of the Gemara is that it's machlokas tanaim, between what ula's opinion is that you need ktuvim to take from income properly versus Rabbi Chanina, where you require ketsuvim to be taken from encumbered property. According to Rashi, it would be not to come up with a third opinion, which is that if it's not ketsuvim and not ketsuvim, right, it can still work, according to Rabbi Natan. And then the question is, how does this Machlokas Tanaim address it at all? And that's more difficult for Rashi. All right, now the Gemara talks about the last issue in our Mishnah. What's the last issue in our Mishnah? Right? Hamotzi mitzia lo yishava. Someone who finds a mitzia does not have to, right, take a shivua. What does that mean? He doesn't have to take a shivua. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, shnei kisim kshurim. You have two wallets that are tied together. Matzat li, that you found. Two of my wallets you found that were tied together. V'hala omer lo matzati elachad. I only found one of those two wallets. Mishva, he has to take a shivua. Shnei shivarim kshurim. You found two of my shvarim, two of my oxen that were tied together. I only found one. Eino nishva. There he doesn't swear. My time. Oxen break apart, meaning that when they're tied together, they run away, they split apart. So therefore, he can make such a claim. He has a valid claim when he says, I only found one ox, not two ox. Kisim lama not chema adodi. Kisim don't split up between each other. All right, so since they don't split up, when he says one, we say, there's something wrong over here that you said you only found one wallet. We know that the two wallets were together. If they're two wallets together, then we have a problem over here. All right, so now what we have a case, right, where he makes a ta'anat bari, he makes a clear claim over here, right, and the other person is, says, modim miritzas, he admits to one of them. One person makes a ta'anat bari, which is, what's the clear claim? I had two wallets that were tied together, and because wallets stay together, I have a ta'anat bari, and another person admits to half of it. When he admits half of it, modim miritzas. Modim miritzas takes a shvua. When it comes to shvurim, he can't make a ta'anat bari. Why? Because he can never say, I had two oxen tied together, because that's not the natural state of oxen. Even if they were tied together at one point, they might have split apart. So now when he comes and makes a claim that I had two oxen tied together, we're not sure that that's really the case. Maybe there's only one ox now that was running around. The other person admits he's not necessarily modim miritzas, because he might have found a single ox.
Where's the ta'anat bari? How does he know what the guy found? He wasn't there when he found it.
No, but he admits to finding one of them. So we know that they, but his claim is that there were two tied together. So that's a ta'anat bari. That, and we know they don't separate naturally wallets. So if he said, I had two wallets together, the guy found one, then the condition of the wallet should have been that they were still tied together. There's a ta'anat bari. All right, that's so, ta'anat bari.
That ta'anat bari should.
Yeah, I mean, that's a chazaka that they would be together. So he has a ta'anat bari in that instance. All right, now, the next line in the Gemara, Rashi, we're going to read, the Gemara now has it as Rashi's girsa. All right, and then the Tosfos changes the girsa back to the one that Rashi eliminated. All right, so now there's a halo there. So now there's the next case. Shnei shvarim kishurim machat. You found two shvarim tied together. Ba'ala omer machati v'chazarti l'chayachat. I did find two of them, but I returned you one of them. Harizeh nishba. Then he is nishba, because that is a case of, again, modim mitzvahs. He agrees that he found both of them, and he says, I gave one back. So now you have a case of modeh miksas. So that case, that's Rashi says, it's all part of the statement of Rabbi Yitzchak, and this whole thing is a single brisa. Tosfos says, no, that the girsa over here is Tanya Nami Hachi. That we have a brisa, that this is another brisa. Tanya Nami Hachi, we have an additional brisa that says, similar to Rabbi Yitzchak, that Shnei Shavari Matatli, Malomer Lo Matati Elechad in Nishba. And then it continues on like our Gemara. Shnei Kisim Kishurim Matzatli. I found two things tied together. And then he says, V'adin Dimar Lo Matzati Alechad Nishba Lo Miftar. So now Tosfos says this is a totally different vaisa, right? And that is Tanya Nami Hochi. Now why is this? Because in the next line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, V'yitzchak Leisplei Hamot Mitzia Lo Yishava Mipnei Tikkun Olam. Rabbi Yitzchak doesn't have, according to Rashi, what is this? Rashi, according to Rashi, what does that mean? Rabbi Yitzchak doesn't have our Mishnah. I mean, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah says, when you're Mochi Mitzia, Lo Yishava Mipnei Tikkun Olam. And here you have Rabbi Yitzchak making a statement that says, what? You do take a Shavua in this case. So that's the way Rashi reads the Gemara. Tosfos says, no. That was, even though we have, and the reason Rashi did this was because if you have a brisa, then what's the question from our Mishnah? You have two Tanaic works, and Rabbi Yitzchak holds like the brisa, and he doesn't hold like our Mishnah. So Rashi changed everything to be Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion. And then the Gemara asks, how can Rabbi Yitzchak have this opinion if our Mishnah says otherwise? So it says, no, you can have the brisa be here. Because why? Many times the Gemara will ask, even though there is a brisa supporting the position of Ben Amora, nevertheless we'll say, Lama Shavik, our Mishnah, and took on a brisa. I mean, that a Mishnah is still a better source than a brisa, and why would Rabbi Yitzchak give up our Mishnah in order to have support from a brisa? That's what he says. Abagav the Messiah le brisa par claimi matnisa. They ask a question from Mishnah. Eishu chavik matnisa mekami brisa. How could they do this? So then the Gemara answers over here. According to Rashi, the answer is what? Hu damak Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He looked like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. We know Mishnato kav benaki. Right, the Mishnah of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is considered to be, you know, pure and good. I mean, he has a strong Masora, and therefore he held like him. So that's what Rashi's answer is. Why didn't he hold like a Mishnah? Because he held like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. According to Tosfos, that's a reason, enough of a reason to go like the Brisa against the Mishnah, is because he has Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov that supports him. Now in the end, the problem in the Gemara in the end is that the end the Gemara rejects this, and that Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov doesn't hold like Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in the end. And therefore in the end it's true that Rabbi Yitzchak has to hold like the Brisa. That's what Tosfos says. In the end, that's exactly what it is. Rabbi Yitzchak has to, in our Korcha, we have to say he holds like the Brisa against our Mishnah. But at least in the Gemara's intent in the beginning is to have Rabbi Yitzchak at least agree with the Mishnah. Now what is this Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov?
The Brisa is the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov.
What?
Because he holds the Brisa, which is the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov.
Now, there's a Brisa that says like him, which we just had, Tanya Nami Hoch, which is not in our Gersa. Rashi eliminated that Gersa, but the Gersa in the Gemara will be Tanya Nami Hochi, that Shnei Shvarim, if I say I admit to having one of them, that is like Rabbi Yitzchak. Tanya Nami Hochi is Rabbi Yitzchak's opinion. So now, why did he hold like that Brisa? We don't know, but we're going to say that it holds like the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. It doesn't mean that he's necessarily the author, but it goes like his position. What is that position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov?
Well, we have a source that says that's his position.
We'll see in a second, because it's not so simple that's his position. That's why. In the end, the Gemara is going to reject it and say it's not his position. So that's why I'm not agreeing to, not to be difficult, but because in the end, the Gemara rejects that being Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov's position, and therefore...
We're at the position of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov.
Right, because then, in the end, the price is not Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, and you have to say someone else is the author of that price. Okay? At this point, the Gemara thinks, yes, it could be Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, whereupon Yim Shatam Nishba, Tanat Atzmo. This is a Gemara that appears in a number of places. Main cases are in Ksubos and in Shuas HaDayonim, which is actually where it comes up. I'll mention to you some of the issues that come up over here. So here, the Tanya, where do we have a case here? Rabbi Yim Shatam Nishba, Al Tanat Atzmo. There are a case where a person takes a Shavua on his own Tainam. Kesa, what's the case here? Mono the Abicha Biyodi, he admits, he says, I have $100, 100 shekel of your father's. They are called Tiv Press, and I gave back half of it already, I gave back 50 of it. He said, Nishpo, he takes a Shavua. Here's a person who takes a Shavua on his own Taina, on his own admission. What do you mean? The guy, the other person would have no idea. The son would have no idea that he owed him money because, right, he didn't, it was his father. He says, I owed your father money. Without me saying that, right, he would have no idea. So why is it that if I come over here and tell you that I owed you 100, I gave 50 already to your father, I'm giving you 50, it's commission of Veda. What did he do? What did the other guy do that I now have something to say?
It's kind of
right. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, let's play Mishav Aveda Potter. I mean, how could Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov not hold of this? I mean, it's so logical that this guy's just, his admission is making the chiyuv here, that why should he have to take a shavua? So I'm a Rav. So Rav says, betono katan. It's a case where a katan makes the taina over here. So what does that mean? Right? What does it mean? So now, wait, I have to say again, because Rashi wants us to argue again through each line of this Gemara. Rashi says, when we say Rabbi Elazar leslei, right, that he lesle kameshiv avei de poter, Rashi says, Rabbi Elazar lesle chashasha de tikun olam, the meshiv avei de poter mishvua, meaning he's saying that it's our Mishnah. Right, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov does not hold of our Mishnah, right? So that's what Rashi says the question over here. Rabbi Elazar doesn't hold of our Mishnah? How could that be? Tosfos says, what do you mean? Right? But that's not exactly the case. We're saying the whole point of bringing Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov over here is to say that Rabbi Yitzchak doesn't have to hold like our Mishnah because of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So how can you bring a question from our Mishnah to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov? So that Gemara says, Tosfos says, no, the question here is, why shouldn't he believe by Mishnah Baveda because it's amigo? It's amigo that he could have said nothing, and then he'd be not chayiv at all. And the fact that he may have said something over here, right, he has a better taino. So since he had a better taino, we should believe amigo. An amigo is, because Iboy Shatik, it was amigo, that an amigo has been a Torah, should be believed over here. Nothing to do with our Mishnah, should be believed because of amigo. So Amarav, Betona, Katan. It's a case where Katan is Tonus. Amar says, Katan Mide Mashasha Ishbeh. If it's a Katan that's been towing him, meaning that it's the son who's a Katan, it's called Taina Tatsmo because a Katan doesn't have any ability to make it. So Amar says, if he doesn't have any ability to make a taina, what type of taina do we have? Here. You don't take a shvua when it comes to a taino of a katan. So what does a taino of a katan help you? So Gemara says, my katan, godol. No, it's a katan who's a godol. He really is what, of age already. He's already of age. So then, by my karele katan, why is he called a katan? The gabi mili da'avim katan who? That he's because by the issues of his father, he's a katan because he doesn't know. His father never told him what happened. So where it says, what do you mean that he's taking a shvua because of his own taina? He's not taking a shvua because of his own taina. He's taking a shvua because of taina tacherim hu. Right? It's because of someone else's taina, the taina of his son. So where it says, taina tacherim v'data atzmo. Right? So he says, now we have a case, but no. Why is it called taina atzmo? Because it's taina tacherim. This son is making a taina. It's a taina shema. Right? But it's hodada atzmo. Without his hoda over here, his taina will be meaningless. Why? Because the son can never make a definitive taina, because he doesn't know what happened with his father. So he makes the taina shema, and then along with the hodah of this other person says, yes, you're right, I did have this money in my hand, but I gave back half already. So it's taina tacherim and hodah tatzmo. And it says, that's every case. Every case of motu mimixus, kula taina, nan the taina tacherim, hodah tatzmo ninu. That's exactly the case, right? Every single case of motu mimixus is one taina, and there's a hodah tatzmo. So what do you mean? What's make this unique? Ella with the Rabbi Kaligi. So Gemara rejects this whole explanation of the Gemara. What happens when the Gemara rejects it over here? So Rashi says, It's unbelievable. Rashi, this machlokus Rashi and the other Rishonim. The main machlokus of this again is in the Gemara in Shkosa Danyanim. But Rashi over here says the Gemara goes back and says that it's really a katan. In the case of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, it's really a katan over here. What's the failure in katan? Why are you not mishboim al tainas katan? So there are two possibilities of why you don't take a shvuah on a tainas katan. One is because, and this is the way Rashi learns, is because a katan doesn't have the ability to generate a shvuah because he can't give. He doesn't have a kinyan. Ki itenish. It says that a person must give an object. When he gives the object, that's what generates the shvuah later on when there's a taina. So a katan who's not an ish can't do the netina. Since he can't do the netina, right, that fails over here, and therefore you can't take a shvuah on tainas katan. What's different in our case? Who did the netina? The father did the netina. So according to Rashi, you qualify the netina by the father. The father did the netina, that can generate the shvuah. The tainas katan later on is fine, because when the katan comes and makes the claim, he's making al yaday the netina of his father. In that case, you can take a shvuah. And that's the conclusion according to Rashi. Look at Rashi, Ella, lo tema betona god. So elabitona katan. The case is the case of a katan, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. The kasha achem nishbaim al tana katan. Hanem ili bitono. He's got to lachot. That's only when he's making a tana on his own giving. The gabi shvuk dev ki itein ish. Because it says he gave it from al katan. Of all bab tana tavim nishbaim afilu the katan. Because the tana of his own giving, he can take a shvuk even on the tana's katan. Why? For the banan afilu gadol ein nishbaim. And according to the rabbanan, even to a gadol, you don't make a claim. Why? Because it's the meishu babedim. But in the end, what do you see? Rashi, when it comes to El Dabrab, when the Gemara rejects all these situations, Rashi says that you could then, by a katan, you could take a shvuah. Other Rishonim, and Tosfos included over here, disagree with Rashi and say, no way. The problem with the katan is that a katan doesn't have a taina. Forget about the tina. The tina is not the issue. The issue is taina. You need a taina, Isaiah Gogol. And yet, it's lacking over here. You don't have a taina's katan. You only have a taina's katan. And so when the Gemara says, El Dabrab, the Gemara rejects this entirely. Right? It says that it doesn't have anything to do, right? It has nothing to do with the katan make a taina over here, and that means that tainat atzmo is what's really tainat achirim, and then the Gemara is going to explain why tainat achirim makes a difference. And this is the next part of the Gemara, the Rabbi of Kligin. But it's a very, very key machlokas rishonim. You have to keep in mind here: what's the failure in a katan, and why you don't take a shvuah on a to katan's taina? Rashi says it's a problem in netina. That means if you could generate the netina by someone else, like through the father, then you would have a shvuah's katan. As opposed to other rishonim, and believe the failure is in the taina itself, and a taina katan will never work, and that means even according to the conclusion of the Gemara, that taina katan does not work at all because you still have a failure, which is basically taina katan, and that you can't do in the end. All right, now, and that will have nafkaminot. Again, this has nafkaminot for, again, we're not going to deal with it, but we'll deal with it when we get to Shuas Adonayim, whether Moda Mixas has application. Where does it have application? Does Moda Mixas have application by Hobal, by loans, by Pigodon, by Shomrim? Shuat HaShomrim. Do you require Moda Mixas to have Shuat HaShomrim? Does it have application by Shuat HaShomrim or not? Again, all these will have questions about how it's generated. How is Moda Mixas generated? Is it generated through the Netino, or is it generated through the Taino? Right, again, if it's generated through the Netina by a Shomer, you may still have it. If it's generated through the Taina, by a Taina Shomer, you never have a Taina's Bari. You can never have a Taina's Bari by a Shomer because you gave it over to the Shomer and you have no idea what happened. The Shomer makes a claim over here about what happened to it. You as the owner never have any Taina against him. So again, all these might have nafkaminot, again, when Moda Mixas applies by all these different cases based on what you think generates the shvuah. Is it the taina or the netina? Again, one of the nafkaminos, which is obviously an argument, is about katan, whether katan created. Right now, the Gemara says, but the Rabbah plege, what's the case of Rabbah? Rabbah explains to us, why does Moda Mixas work? Da'amah Rabbah b'nei ma'amra Torah Moda Mixas v'taina yishvuah, why does it take the shvuah? Chazok ein adam ma'yizpanah b'fnei ba'al chuvot. Person does not, but be mayiz. He will not be arrogant enough to say before someone he's obligated money to, and say, I do not owe you money. He really would deny the whole thing. Why does he not deny the whole situation? Because he's too embarrassed. Or somebody here is standing here who lent him the money, he's too embarrassed to deny the whole thing. Rashi says, not here, but in other places, says it's because asalo tova, that he did him a tova. He did him some benefit. He gave him some benefit, and therefore, since he did him a tova, he's too afraid to deny it. Tosfos over here rejects it and says no, that it's just a right. It's a natural psychology that a person will not deny something when he knows the person standing opposite him knows the truth is otherwise. But again, the nafkamina again will be other cases like kadom and shomrim, a case where he didn't do you any tova. Right, bal kova is a case where he's alone, he did you a tova. According to Rashi, what are you doing? That's a Tosfos question over here. What are you doing? Bikadom. We know motive makes a surprise about bikadom in other cases. How do you say motive makes? According to Rashi, there's no tova by bikadom. Right, that's not. He didn't do him any benefit by lending him money. Bikadom is a totally different state. Shomrim is a totally different case. Do you have other mixes there? Again, Shuas Daram will deal it, but that's Machlokas in the Rishonim. Whether the issue is Tova that he's doing for him, or the issue is that he won't lie when the guy knows the truth opposite him. So truthfully, he should admit everything. He's not willing to lie in front of the guy. So why does he do this? He's trying to escape. Why is he trying to escape? He doesn't have enough money to pay him back. And then I'll pay him back. So what does he say? So he has two tzadim. He has one tzad which says what? One side says, I should deny the whole thing. Why doesn't he deny the whole thing? Because he's too embarrassed to deny the whole thing. Why is he too embarrassed? According to Rashi, because the guy did him a tova. According to Tosfos, because the guy knows the truth. The guy standing opposite knows the truth. He won't deny the whole thing. So now he won't deny the whole thing. He should admit it. If he's going to admit the whole thing, why should he admit the whole thing? Why doesn't he admit the whole thing? Because he doesn't have the ability to pay it back now. Why does he have the ability to pay it back now? It's because he doesn't have the money. So he says, I'll lie a little bit. I'll say part of it's there, and when I get the rest of the money, I will pay him back. So Amar Rachman and Rami Shmuel Keichad Lola Dei Bikule. Put a shmua on him to force him to what? To admit to the whole thing. So Rashi asks the question over here, and from Rashi it seems like this is the second side. Rashi asks the question over here. If he's chosher on mamon to lie on mamon, why is he believed by the shmua? He's chosher to lie about the mamon. Why isn't he chosher on the shmua? So Rashi says no problem. He's not chosher on the mamon because that's exactly what the second side said. He should have admitted the whole thing, but he only admits to part of it. The fact that he admits to part of it shows that he's not chosher on the mamon. Because if he was really chosher on the mamon, he would deny the whole thing. So Rashi says, what's the reason that he only admitted to half of it? He admitted to half of it because he's not chosher on the mamon, because he really will pay it back. And therefore he's not chosher on the shmua. Tosfos rejects this and says, no way, that's not the case over here. He says the reason that the Gemara is explaining on the other side of here is other side of the Kachnir, the Akleferish Lotema, came Dein Adam Meis Panav, Im Ken Kushna Kamar. Therefore, he's not lying. Be Pater Mishvah Meoto Mitzah Shekofer. And then he should be Potter on the second half, totally. Be Tam Kazaka Dein Adam Meis Panav. If a person's not willing to lie to his Bachol, then we should believe. When he says 50%, we should believe him. That's what the other side says. No, there is a reason to believe that he lied over here. Why is there a reason to believe he lied? It's because he's trying to get out of it. He's trying to slip out a little bit, you will pay him later. So you get the other side. Because it says that this does not explain why Kofar HaKol is Potur, because that just explains we find from other places why Kofar HaKol is Potur, and has nothing to do with the Din of Rabble over here.
Well, Kofar HaKol, also if we say that Ahmed is made his Potur, so if it's Kofar HaKol,
So Tosfos rejects that. That's exactly what Tosfos is not the case over here. Is that he says Kofar HaKol is Gzeres HaKotuv and it has nothing to do with Meis Panov Bifnei Bal Chovo, because then otherwise he'll always have a Migo. Because he says, if what you're saying is true, Shaul, that the reason that we believe him by Kofar HaKol is because Ein Adam Meis Panov, that when he admits to half we should believe because of Migo. Because if he would have been Meis Panov, he would have denied the whole thing. The fact that he didn't, he should be believed by Motor Mixes. So Tosfos says that cannot be the reason over here, and the reason is there's a cult of, and that's why there's no Migo in this case over here. So now that's the Machlokes. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov suffered lo shnapo, lo shnabim, no ein adam, meiz panav. Doesn't matter to the original person or his son, person will not lie to them, right? So that they will not lie to him or his son in that case. Right, therefore, we say take a shvua, because then you have the instance of Rab over here. Hilchah lach b'meishi b'veidahu. Therefore, he's not a meishi b'veidah, because we have this offsetting issue of Imeiz Adameiz Panav, and therefore he would never lie. So since he would never lie, he doesn't have a Migo over here. Whereas Rabbanan Sarmi, Bohu Dein Omeiz Panav, Ababiv No Meiz, by the son he will lie to him. If he will lie to him, then you have a Migo, because by Kofar HaKol, this is the case by Kofar HaKol, then we would believe him. Why? Because it's Tumeshim Aveda. Right? If it's Tumeshim Aveda, then it's Migo, because he could have said nothing. He could have lied and said, I owe you nothing, because he would be Meiz Panav by Bino. Since he would be Meiz Panav by Bino, we say that he is believed by the 50 people is Meshav Edo, Meshav Edo, therefore he is a Meshav Edo. Okay, we'll stop over here.